It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Welcome back, Brad. How have you been, man?
Doing good. Just working my buns off. Losing a little weight.
So is this a new contract for you or something you've been working on for a while?
Well, I used to work for myself and I changed jobs just because I did it for all the benefits, you know, retirement and whatnot. I wasn't putting away enough money on my own and taxes were killing me. And I'm just tired of being a self-employed essentially. So I'm working for the man now, I guess you could say, but it's similar work. It's still a tech company. You know, they have about 800 clients around central Mississippi and I pulled in all of my clients that I already had. So they get my existing clients all got to keep me as their IT guy.
Excellent.
Being self-employed sometimes is not quite all it's cracked up to be. About, I guess it was 11 years ago, I kind of got burnt out on corporate America and left and started my own business. And I was really happy that I did it. I still look back and have fond memories of, you know, being my own boss and making all the decisions and whatnot. But sometimes going back to the corporate America where you do have the amenities of healthcare and vacation days.
Stability.
That kind of stuff. So I don't mind working for the man anymore.
So we're going to start with some follow-up before we jump into our WWDC coverage. We had a listener named John Dawson write in and point out from last week's episode that you can turn on within Do Not Disturb. You can do auto replies to everyone, recents, favorites, or no one. So that is something I had not really played with in Do Not Disturb, but I think I will take a look at that. I wouldn't mind having it not reply to anyone. So that's definitely something I'm going to look at. He also pointed out you can turn off the sounds completely in Waze, which, yes, we were aware of that. But it's really just selective alerts we want to turn off. I don't want the hazards on the side of the road. Just tell me where the cops are hiding. Just tell me where obstructions in the road are. That would be great. I say that, and I got a speeding ticket a couple of weeks ago when I went to visit my parents. 300 and some odd mile drive. I get to the last mile. Literally the last mile, I get a ticket. Just my luck. So $182.50 later for going 18 over. Oh, well. Worth it. Totally worth it.
Yeah, I look at it from the standpoint of I speed every day. So if I only get caught like every 5 years, that's a small penance to pay.
Yeah, when you spread it out over the course of several years where that happens, then I kind of look at it as just paying the every few years. I think my last one was in 2014. Again, coming from Mississippi, I had made it the entirety of the way back and I got stopped on 285. By a cop who was pacing me and didn't use radar, sneaky, sneaky man, at 12:30 in the morning. So, less the said about that, the better. But, you know, that is kind of cool. So let's just go ahead and jump into everything that was announced. So yesterday, WWDC happens, the keynote kicks off. So many goodies were revealed. Let's start with iOS 12. So they kick off the presentation and we're given ARKit 2. And all the things that come with it, including a open file format for AR that Pixar created. We're going to get some multiplayer augmented reality apps and realistic rendering, improved face tracking, and they had Adobe come out and demonstrate some things. What did you guys think of the AR stuff?
So I'm not a huge gamer, but I was pretty impressed with that one game where it looked like there were like wooden toys on the table.
Yeah, doing the slingshots.
Yeah, the slingshots was really cool. So I saw that and I thought, you know what, if my nieces and nephew came over on a Friday night or something like that, that would be something fun to get a couple of iPads and clean off the kitchen table and have them play a game like that against each other.
I like the Lego thing.
Oh, man. Yeah, I as someone who loves Lego, I love seeing that.
I think that could really go places because I like the Marvel Universe Lego game. I don't know if you've ever played that.
Yes, I own both of those, the first one and the sequel, where you fight King the Conqueror.
Yeah, I have the first one, and I bought it on Steam a couple of years ago, and I love it. That would be really cool to be able to play some Hulk or Iron Man on your kitchen table or whatever. And then the little app where he measured, you know, his suitcase, and the other little thing where they showed the Fender Strat and he set it on the table after he'd picked his color. I thought that stuff was pretty neat.
Now, I thought what was really neat about that was that you could create an object and sort of leave it there for other people to find. So, you know, the options for you know, virtual geocaching, for example. I know many people that you and I used to work with, Jason, and you still work with, are really big into the whole geocaching thing. And I remember once I helped one of our coworkers at the time find a geocache behind the forum next to the office. It was hidden up on, I had to stand on a guardrail and almost climb a fence that was still my height when I was standing on the guardrail. She would have never gotten to it where it was. But think about the possibilities for virtual geocaching. That's kind of neat. Yeah, I thought the ARKit stuff was cool. The Lego thing, I did like the little boomerang, the little game they played, or not boomerang, slingshots. The virtual slingshots was very cool. As a huge, huge Lego fan, I found the, I think the demo they used, the DC Lego stuff as an example. I found that to be just fascinating. That was right up my alley. So I would buy that in a heartbeat. I own a lot of the Lego games on Xbox and Steam as well. So things like Lego Harry Potter, Lego Indiana Jones, Lego Marvel, Lego Batman, all of Star that Wars. Stuff. Lego Star. Oh my goodness! I think I own both the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy for that. Those, I mean, they're good time wasters, and they're frustrating at times at how difficult they are. It's like, how does a kid figure this out?
But they're simple enough that a sort of a casual gamer could easily get into it, or a non-gamer could easily get into it and have fun.
Yes.
Yeah. So one thing that I thought was pretty interesting, you know, I've been an Apple fan and followed their products for over a decade now. And to see Adobe in the first 5 minutes of a WWDC keynote, I thought was pretty telling of kind of the post-Jobs Apple that's there today. I mean, Adobe already seems like they're all in with ARKit 2. It's going to be part of their Creative Cloud offering. They're going to have the ability to pull in assets from Creative Cloud to build your ARKit 2 applications. And later in the show, in the keynote, like hour and a half later, they were also touting Microsoft bringing Office 365 to the App Store, right? So to kind of see, you know, on the biggest developer stage that Apple has over the course of a year, to have both Adobe and Microsoft as key partners, not sworn enemies, is kind of neat.
Do recall when the iPad Pro was announced in iOS 11 and they had the split screen, that Microsoft supported that from the very beginning. So when they were there demoing how to split screen between apps, you know, I think they were doing Word and PowerPoint or something. They supported the pencil from the very beginning. So Microsoft has been a good partner. And it's also worth remembering that Kevin Lynch, who is the guy who's in charge of watchOS, he was the CTO of Adobe. And he was a staunch advocate of Flash on top of that. So the guy who's been running watchOS ever since it launched was the guy who was in charge of Flash over at Adobe. So, you know, it's a small world. This technology world is a small world. Less surprising when you consider that, I think.
What I think's funny is I remember the old days of, or at least at this announcement where you see Adobe, you know, first on the stage, and in previous years where they would update OS, or it may have been before OS 10, or I'm talking about just, you know, Mac OS 9 or whatever. But, you know, art people, graphic people would wait and wait and wait for possibly months because their version of Photoshop or Illustrator wouldn't work if they had updated their Mac OS. And now it's like they're you know, hitting the starting point at the same time now.
Well, for the longest time too, whenever they would have new APIs, you know, they would have to go beg Adobe to support them. And that was one of the reasons that under Jobs, they made such a big push to make their own first-class software that, you know, competed with Adobe on some regards, like video editing and publishing and those types of things, just because they were held back by Adobe. If Adobe didn't want to support it, you know, what are you going to do about it? Not to lessen that, it is kind of nice to see a one-time partner, one-time rival, frenemy of sorts, be on stage. But I'm proud of Microsoft, too, for putting that in the App Store, because that's where it belongs. Why would you not? You know, if you're a software vendor, the big surprise, and we're sort of getting ahead of ourselves by talking about the software vendors, but I will go ahead and throw it out there. Did you guys notice that Barebones and Panic are putting their software back in the Mac App Store, which is a big deal because both of them were staunch critics of the Mac App Store? And we can get to that later, but BBEdit and Transmit are coming back to the App Store. I mean, who saw that coming?
That's a pretty big announcement. I think they lessened some of the restrictions, though, of how you can use the sandbox in Mac OS. And I think it kind of made their applications a little easier to not lose the functionality that they would have being a standalone outside of the App Store.
So for Transmit to come back, that definitely has to be the case. I don't remember seeing anything in the keynote that talked about that, but you would have to think that would be the case. Otherwise, Transmit could not exist in the Mac App Store. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll cover the Mac stuff in just a minute. So from an AR perspective, I'm really excited about it, just like I was last year. It still looks great, just like it did last year. But I kind of want to see Apple release glasses or something where you can use it, because right now, not so impressive if you're having to do it just with phones and iPads. And I know that they haven't announced anything, and rumor has it they're working on it. But really, if you're going to be able to get the most out of AR, it's going to have to be something that it's easier. You don't want to have to walk with your phone and stuck in front of your face the entire time. I don't think that's the ideal situation for anyone. And I don't think that that's how Apple ultimately envisions this working. So I'm hopeful about that. What do you guys think?
Well, I think one way to incorporate AR that would be super, super cool is in a GPS type app. You know, let's pretend that you've got your phone in landscape mode in a case, you know, or a holder above your dashboard, right? To be able to look out and actually see what's going on in front of your camera, so it looks kind of completely transparent to your eyesight, but actually have it listing the names of the roads or showing, you know, what businesses are on both sides of the road, something like that. An AR version of GPS would be pretty slick.
I thought Google and Apple were both working on that. I thought I remember seeing a leak not too long ago saying that was in the works from one or both of them. I may be wrong on that, but I thought that was the case.
That would be, to use Jason's example, that would be great for those, you know, you're in a downtown situation and you can't figure out, you know, if the road sign is on the left or the right or whatever, you know, like the name of the street. So, you know that you're coming up to Main Street or whatever, you need to turn left or right, you know, the app would tell you that versus you having to hunt for that sign on the road to know where to turn.
So, turns out that about a month ago at Google I.O., they mentioned that they demonstrated the ability to use AR for doing walking navigation. So definitely coming to Google. I imagine it would have to be coming to, you know, at some point to Apple as well. But yes, that would definitely be useful. But having something where you're not having to hold your phone out in front of you in your field of vision to be able to use it would also be, I mean, it's a good first step, but I really want to see, I want to see something like Google Glass, but not as dorky, I hope.
Well, that's like, you know, you remember, I guess it was a couple months ago when Intel was working on those smart glasses, and it would somehow project through your pupil, like onto your retina, you know, the information you wanted to see. And I think they've already killed the project because it was essentially research for them. But the concept of it was really cool. So it would be awesome for them to do something like that. But they looked like real glasses. They didn't look like just, you know, I'm some lamer with a, you know, a Bluetooth on my head and these really cool new glasses that nobody has ever seen before. I mean, they looked like regular eyeglasses. The Intel ones did. So I would love to see, you know, Apple do something like that, or a third party make a, you know, an AR capable, you know, aftermarket type product like 12 South or somebody like that that gets into the eyeglass business, or Warby Parker or something.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So going down the list of things that were also announced, photos got some love, though. Again, we've mentioned this many times. I hope they're not doing this just once a year. Please don't just do this type of stuff once a year. But they're beefing up the search library. They're doing object and scene recognition, which they kind of do now. Like, you'll get notifications every so often, or at least I do, of, you know, hey, these, we have some new food photos of, you know, nature photos you've taken. Little things like that, a little pop-up. There's a For You tab that will compile things using suggestions for the on-device machine learning to make suggestions. I know a lot of people who are not tech people who automatically install Google Photos because it's unlimited storage and they're super happy with it. How do you guys feel about this? Does this impress you? Do you care?
It's not something I really use that much. I mean, I do take pictures with my phone, but I'm not one of those that just am so hyper-focused on organizing them. And, you know, I'm just not one of those type of sentimental persons that has to just keep up with every single picture. I mean, if I need to go back and find an individual photo, I'll be able to find it just because I have a, you know, good memory recall, and I can say to my head, you know, well, that happened in May 2016.
Oh my God, we are more alike than you know, because I'm the same way. I can scroll through my photos going back for years, and I know how far I need to scroll based on, because I have a weird sort of timeline in my head of chronology of how things happen, and that's how I do it. My wife takes a lot of pictures, her and her whole family, but that was something I had to get used to when we first started dating, was how many photos they took. So they document things very well, and I'm sure that's going to be useful to her. The biggest feature that was announced out of photos that excited me the most, and this is a problem that we have normally when we go on vacation, I'll take pictures with my phone, she'll take pictures with her phone, but we have different iCloud accounts, obviously. So we both have a set of photos. So what we would have to do is take each other's phone. Like, she'd give me her phone and I would do AirDrop of all the photos she took within a range from my phone to hers and vice versa. Well, now when you text someone those pictures, if they detect, if your device detects, hey, I have pictures from that same location during the same time frame, it will prompt the other person to share those photos back with you so you have a complete set. To me, that's going to be a huge, huge time saver and probably my most anticipated feature out of the photos announcements. I must be alone in this.
That is pretty cool. My wife can take just impeccable photos with her phone. And if I try to take a photo in the dark or, you know, in a dimly lit room, it just looks terrible. And I don't know what she's doing versus what I'm doing, but she's great at it. So we went to see a concert a week ago or so, I guess. And her pictures of the show were just on a professional level. They look that good. And, you know, I took a couple and they're just awful blurs. I mean, they're just terrible. So that would be a perfect example of, like, you know, I took a couple and, you know, I look at mine and she could, you know, have it suggest, you know, hey, well, you know, your wife has these photos, and then I get all the good photos on my phone, you know.
she would not accept yours, but you could accept hers. My wife does a phenomenal job of taking pictures as well. My sister-in-law will often take pictures and it ends up of people's feet and butts accidentally. Like the camera's always pointed down. It's suboptimal. The one area that I wish my wife would learn to use is burst mode on the phone. Like if we're taking pictures of the dog or we're taking pictures of kids, it's always hard for her to get them to line up. I'm like, just hold down the volume button. Let's see. So enough about photos. Photos and AR, that's cool. Not the most interesting. Now we're to the part of my favorite part of the keynote. The thing that just made me, you know, cry out to the heavens and rejoice. It is Siri Shortcuts. And the first thing that I thought of when I saw this is, look at the interface. That's Workflow. You know, remember they bought Workflow, I think, in like 2017, which was, right. For those that don't remember that may be listening, Workflow was this app where you could automate things. And they had so many cool automations. I can remember in early 2015 being able to summon an Uber with a single touch of my Apple Watch, back when that was back on watchOS 1, which was primitive. And of course, you know, some of those companies changed the terms of their integrations so you couldn't do that. And the Uber one was one that went away. But it was so nice, all the things that you could do. And they didn't even have operating system level access. Well, now that they're owned by Apple, they have operating system access. And boy, howdy, is it pretty cool. So the first thing that came to mind, we talked a few weeks ago about the skills that you can do on Alexa where you teach it to do what you want it to do. Like you can give it custom questions and answers, custom commands where it's very specialized. And since Siri, let's face it, kind of sucks in a lot of regards, it lags behind the competition. This is actually a good way to sort of jumpstart the usefulness of Siri because now you can make options with all third-party apps. That's the kicker right there, is that you don't have just Siri Kit where something has to enable it. You can have Siri do things for you on your behalf. So the example that was given, I think, was you could say, help me find my keys, and it could launch the Tile app from within the Siri interface and start looking for your keys, which is way cool. You can do a multi-step routine like, you know, tell it you're heading home. It could start an iTunes radio station or playlist, adjust your home thermostat, text your spouse with an ETA. I mean, this is really sort of the crazy glue, the duct tape, the Swiss Army knife that we actually needed to make this assistant useful. And they didn't even have to make it smart on the back end. This was such a gimme that I'm really kind of pissed they didn't do this earlier, because this is the type of thing that we've been needing. Let me tell it to do exactly what I want it to do from within any app, and I'm going to be a happy man.
Yeah, when they revealed it, I almost clapped, right? I mean, it was so nice and easy and simple. And it was, like you said, it's kind of a head scratcher of why haven't we had this for a long time already? And, you know, I started then thinking of all the possibilities that could be done. I mean, they, you know, they just gave the heading home or help me find my keys examples. But if this thing could integrate with like if this, then that, or, you know, like you said, other apps, I mean, it's almost endless the type of stuff that you could stitch together to make a really cool automation.
And there are plenty of things that if it can actually send text messages on your behalf, that's something that they had locked down in the past. So I use a third-party app on my iPhone for a long time called Launcher. Launcher is really, really cool. So if you look on my home screen, like if you slide to the right where your news feed and all that stuff is, like your little announcements, Launcher lives over there, and I have pre-programmed ways buttons that will give me a real-time distance. Like I have one for work and one from home. No matter where I am, if I slide my phone, my home screen to the right, it'll tell me via Waze what the time it would take to get home or to work is. Little things like that. But one of the things they couldn't do is have a button where you hit a button and it automatically sends a text message. it sounds like, at least via Siri, that they're relaxing this just a little bit, and it's not a moment too soon. And presumably, just like with most of their other things, this is all done on device. So it's not having to go out to the cloud. You're not having to worry about it getting compromised. It's going to be on your device, and it's going to learn. That was the other thing, too. One of the demos they gave, and they promised this every year, and please let this actually work as advertised for once. Let it be proactive. Like, if it notices, like, I go to Starbucks. There's a Starbucks between my house and work, and I hit it probably 4 days a week and get, like, just a tall black coffee. If it knew, hey, you're on the way to this. Would you like your normal tall black coffee? And gave me a prompt where I could just say yes, and it goes and hits the order. I would find
it for you. Yeah. Just step in and pick up your coffee and split. Yeah.
And because it's Apple and they're not making money off selling that data to Starbucks, I feel better about it happening under iOS than I would, let's say, under Android. So I'm very, very excited about this. Brad, do you see yourself using this in some cases? What are the useful utilities to you in that regard?
Oh, I definitely see myself using this. All of the examples they already gave are perfect, you know, even though they're sort of the obvious ones that you already think, you know that you need. There's so many that I could tie in that I can't really even sort of dream right now. I mean, I know that there's so much potential there.
Well, I think the advantage that this has over the Amazon Dingus skills is that operates without a screen. This operates with a screen. And even though it's not going to be still, I would say, feature parity with something like the Google Assistant, this definitely gives it a leg up so that it's eminently more useful. If you're not using it, it's only because you're not customizing it to do things, not that it's now lacking intelligence. Yeah, this is a shortcut. Yeah, this is kind of a cheat of, you know, in a perfect world, the assistant would already be able to do all this stuff just by asking it. But hey, I mean, it's, you know, if they take that and they're able to learn even on a per device level of what my patterns are, of things that I want predictively, of being able to anticipate what I want, I think I'd be okay with that.
Well, like, we have a daily conference call every day. So if I've got, you know, things on my schedule that I already have to hit and I don't need to go into the office or whatever, but we still have that conference call, you know, we're covering what didn't get hit yesterday afternoon, you know, what needs to go be hit early in the morning, whatever. So if it could, you know, I crank the truck, it joins Bluetooth and then just dials work, you know, dials that conference number immediately. Just, you know, it knows it's 8 o'clock. It's time to, you know, get on the call. Have it automatically do that. Would you like to, you know, call the conference? Yes. You know, just have it do that every time. And then, you know, place an order at Starbucks or some just the other myriad of things that you bring into your daily routine of getting back and forth to work that we sort of take for granted and you sort of do just as a robot, just by your own automation. You know, you get out and buy a Red Bull or whatever it is that you may do in the morning.
Yeah, handling those mundane tasks. One of the examples that was shown in the demo, speaking of meetings, was it noticed you weren't at the meeting and your ETA to get to the meeting was passed when the meeting started. Do you want me to text the person or message them and say, I'm going to be late? Like, little things like that could be very, very useful. So this is what we've talked about, of wanting Siri to be smarter and actually do something useful. If it's supposed to be learning this stuff about you, put it to good use. And it looks like it's going to be that way. So I was just happy to see when they showed what the interface looked like, that it was the workflow interface. And that made me happy because sometimes Apple will buy things and then you never hear from that team again. You never see that product again. It just goes away. And you're like, what happened to that? Did they do anything with it? Well, this clearly, we know who's been working on it because that interface was unmistakably workflow. I mean, the app is still available. You can go and look at it, but it made me happy to know that they made an acquisition, they did something with it, and it didn't go away. So
yeah, they didn't just completely kill it.
Yeah, good for you, Apple, for doing the right thing in this case. So group notifications, that was the other thing. So I know when we see our common Android friend, Jason, he's going to go, hey, looks like they finally ripped off notifications.
Oh, he's definitely going to play that one up.
But you know what? I don't care. I'm glad they stole it. Good for them. It's past due. I'm happy to get group notifications. One of the things that irritates me as an owner of a Ring doorbell is that, you know, I don't have a lot of false positives, but if I pull in or pull out of my garage, that sets off my Ring because the one that's the non-pro model, well, I guess even the pro model, it could, depending on how your door is angled. But, you know, the heat signature off the vehicle is what sets it off on mine because mine doesn't do like the pro. But I get tons of those notifications. I'm about to put one in at my parents' house and, you know, I'll be on their account as well so that I can see you know, hey, because they're getting on up there, and, you know, just be able to keep an eye on them or who comes to their door. So I'll get those notifications. It's just nice to know that I can get one grouping of a notification and manage it from within the screen. So I'm glad they did it. And yeah, it may be a ripoff of Android, but honestly, the notifications has needed an overhaul for a while, and I'm very happy to see this.
I certainly hope that they've got it to where you can, by default, collapse some and have others be open. Like, I don't get enough Instagram notifications in the day to want to collapse that. But you mentioned Ring, right? You know, I've got my Ring set up fairly sensitive, so it picks up everything. And so I've got it set to where I don't get notifications for movement. I only get notifications for actual rings. Well, I would probably turn the notifications for movement back on if I could have it collapsed, you know, to where it's not showing me 50 and where I'd have to scroll three pages worth to get to whatever the next app is in the notification center.
I can see those being useful for things like Telegram or whatever, where you've got group conversations and it, you know, it does a notification for every time somebody says something, you know, and you're having a chatty Cathy day. So then you get home and there's 500 updates for, you know, your kid's soccer team or something like that. You know, you could collapse those and, you know, move past it.
So many times I end up turning off notifications for apps where I'd otherwise want to know what's going on just because of that same situation. So I, for one, am very happy to see that this is going to be a thing. And it looked like as well, they're going to have a do not disturb setting that will designate a specific period as bedtime and mute any incoming notifications over that time so that you can allow them to then roll in the morning. I kind of do this now. I put my phone to do not disturb every night at a certain time, and it comes off of do not disturb every morning at a certain time. And I'm glad I do that because my parents are super early risers and they're an hour behind me. And they get up like practically the middle of the night for no reason, even though they're retired. And I can't tell you how many times, hey, my Apple TV's having a problem. I'll call Brian and, you know, he'll fix it. And it's like 4:50 in the morning, my time. And it's like I wake up and I have 5 missed calls. And I'm like, yeah, this is a great setting. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, my D&D has a, you know, a sunrise and sunset type setting. I think it comes on at 10 and cuts off at maybe even 7. So it's not even going off before I'm even ready to walk out the door in the morning.
So it looks like they're also going to have a thing called screen time that will let you know how bad your device addiction is and allow you to set limits. I told my wife about that. She said that is not something that I need in my life. Like, she doesn't want to know how much time she spends playing Plants vs. Zombies or scrolling Facebook or whatever. What do you guys think about that?
I need it. I mean, I hate to admit it, but I spend way too much on Instagram, right? I just like looking at other people's stuff. And, you know, I follow a lot of really interesting people and get to see stuff from all over the world and various things that I like. But I spend probably an hour and a half or 2 hours a day on Instagram. And that's an hour and a half or 2 hours a day that I could probably spend riding a bicycle or getting on the rower or going to the gym. So for me, like, I don't see it as a panacea to drop a bunch of weight, but if I had something that was like, dude, you've already spent 45 minutes today, go have a life, I might like that to pop up.
It would be a good reminder, I think. I mean, I don't know that I spend that much time on it. It varies on the day, I guess. Some days I do, some days I barely get on, but I've tried around the house to just leave my phone in one place and try not to touch it if I possibly can. And, you know, oftentimes I don't hold well to that, but I've been trying to do better with it. I think I'm looking forward to sort of tracking that and getting some idea of it, because that's one of the reasons I have a hard time. I feel guilty about playing video games for the same reason. You get on that computer, you get on that phone, and the next thing you know, 2 or 3 hours are just gone in an instant. And I hate that. Like, it's like a time machine. You just instantly jump over several hours at a pop, and I have to be careful about that because I do have a bit of an addictive personality, so I tend to avoid it. So I am looking forward to that. Let's see. Group FaceTime. Oh, my goodness. You know, I saw a lot of snark on Twitter when this was announced of, so when are they going to open source it? You know, going back to Steve Jobs' announcement back in 2010 when they first announced FaceTime. And you know what? It's kind of funny because they've been sued about 8 ways from Sunday about FaceTime. So I don't think we're ever going to see that be open sourced. And it's sort of folly at this point. There is no, you know, you're not going to see any of these products do that. So, I mean, come on. Steve Jobs is dead for a long time now. Let's let that go. It's not going to be open sourced.
I really do try to not be an Apple snob. But I kind of like that FaceTime is exclusive to the Apple platforms. And I do kind of also get a chuckle when, you know, I get into like a group text kind of thing and see the peasants with their green text come across. I'm like, man, you just don't know what you're missing. So, yeah, I don't ever see FaceTime going open source.
Not only do I not see it open source, it's not been a big deal. I mean, the thing that's an impediment to any new technology is the number of people that can use it. iOS is not hurting for users. Macs are not hurting for users. If you went through the contacts on my phone, I would probably guess easily 90% have access to FaceTime. And, you know, that's good enough for me. There's always Skype if I have to talk to someone that wasn't on an Apple device, but not a big deal to me either. I will tell you, it brings up a funny point when you talk about the text messaging. Without going into too many specifics, I know a group of people of whom there's a mixture of Apple and Android people, and let's just say that, you know, those little things you can put on a message where you click on the message and you hold it down and you can go ha ha or like or whatever. You get the little reactions, I guess, is what they are inside of iMessage. Well, this particular group of people, they did this in this mixed text message between iOS and Android. And every time they would do that, it would send a text message saying so-and-so laughed at this message. So-and-so loves this message. Well, it was, how can I put this? One of the recipients, who happened to be an Android user, although that shouldn't be important, got really indignant about that. Stop turning my text messages into Facebook with your stupid likes. And the situation quickly devolved from there. I hate you. No, I hate you. Not only do I hate you, but my kids hate you. Like, it went from a civil discussion with little reactions to Jerry Springer real quick. Like, I was sitting like, wow, that escalated quickly. Who anticipated this coming? I mean, if everyone had iPhones, this would not have happened. I think that's the point of the story that gets missed. That should be an Apple commercial right there. So, yeah, it was like watching a car crash of how awful this was. And I'm like, I'm one who's quick to fly off the handle. And even I was like, wow, this might be a bit much, folks. I don't know. We might need to tone this down a bit.
I just sent both of you guys a picture in Telegram of exactly that scenario happening earlier today.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. Yes, that is it. Wow. Exactly what I was talking about. All it was missing was the opening scene from Dawn of the Dead remake, where like cars are crashing into things and neighbors are shooting at each other and it's just pandemonium and cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria. It was something to behold. But if that had, you know, if they just had all iPhones, it wouldn't have happened. But yeah, so wow, that we got off on quite the tangent there. Up to 32 people can join in a call, which I think is absolute and utter madness. I think that's
a little excessive. That's exactly what I was about to say.
What is nice is just like with Skype, you can join, you can come in and go out of a call, and you can answer from any device that supports FaceTime. And if like you're on the Apple Watch and it only does audio only, you can join as audio only. So that's kind of nice. I like that. Are you guys familiar with...
Well, you know, if you still have curlers in your hair, whatever, you know.
If you're answering from the third stall on the fourth floor, you could do that. So FaceTime with 32 people. Are you guys familiar with an app called House Party by any chance?
I am not.
House Party was a thing that was started by the same people that did Meerkat. Remember when Meerkat was a thing and they were using Twitter and Twitter was like, beat it. And sort of shut them down so that you couldn't integrate with their platform. And then Twitter bought Periscope and integrated that and pretty much did the same thing. Well, the people that were sort of kicked to the curb with that product went and formed a thing called House Party, which, as I am to understand, is pretty popular with the kids, with the quote-unquote the kids. And it was similar in concept to this, but it was iPhone and, well, phone only. I think there was an Android client too, but it mostly operated off the phone. Well, at the same time, during the WWDC announcement, they announced they were finally adding Mac support. And I'm thinking, too little too late, man. You just got Sherlocked. So rest in peace, House Party.
Speaking of Sherlocked, I thought it was kind of funny that the Measure app that's in iOS 12, right? Like one of the selling features of the, you know, iPhone 8 and 10, the commercials that have been on recently from Apple have been showing the app that they just Sherlocked. So I thought it was pretty funny.
Not only that, you and I installed the beta, and I don't know, Brad, if you've done it. I'm guessing you probably have not.
I haven't.
But Jason and I are both running 12 beta 1, sorry, on our primary phones. Come at me, bro. And so far so good. But yeah, I saw the Measure app in there, and I've used some of those AR measuring apps, and I have historically, I have not been impressed because they aren't very accurate. At least that's been my experience. However, I did put my feet on the floor and put them out a certain length, and then measured the distance apart that I could get them with the Measure app that was built into iOS 12. And yeah, it was pretty close. I mean, it got the distance right much more accurately than the competing apps that I had tried in the past. So I was pleasantly surprised by that. Have you played with the Measure app since you got it on the device yet or not?
I haven't.
You should. It's really good. It's, you know, it's Apple quality. So that I thought that was kind of impressive. I know that when the macOS finally, when this all is stable, when iOS 12 and the new version of Mojave is stable, I can see us switching to FaceTime from Skype so that we don't have to use this anymore. I would be just happy doing that. And right now, Jason is measuring his iMac Pro. He's measuring right now.
It says the screen is 27 inches diagonally.
That is exactly what it says. That's exactly the measurement that I just took.
I wanted
to see if it was accurate.
It is accurate. It does a good job. I was very pleased. And all of them should have been doing that. But so let's see what else we got. Memoji, which is a lot like Bitmoji. It's also like the sort of the Samsung AR emoji they did. I know Jason and I were playing with that last night, posting the results in Telegram. What did you think about that, Jason?
I thought it was pretty cool, man. I mean, again, it's something silly. It's stupid. It should not be a reason that you buy the iPhone X, but it was pretty slick. Now, I will say that it was the very first iOS 12 feature that I sought out after the upgrade to play with.
Wow, really?
Well, I wanted to send a, you know, funny message to my wife. She wasn't able to watch the keynote, and she uses Bitmoji like crazy when sending me texts. And she's like a master at the Bitmoji, right? I mean, how she finds stuff that's relevant to the conversation, and it just fits in perfectly. Like, at first I thought it was so dumb, but she's so creative with it and is so good with it. You know, for me to be able to send her a Memoji. And I recently got a new pair of glasses. I'm not wearing them right now, but I got a pair of what my mother refers to as BCGs, birth control glasses.
Birth control glasses.
Yeah. They're just, you know, the old army black frames.
The Drew Carey special.
Yeah. I mean, they're back in style now. And I wanted a pair of transitions lenses where they're, you know, clear and inside and, you know, shades outside kind of thing. So I got a pair of Oakleys like that. And so I made me a new Memoji with my new glasses and sent that to her. And she just thought that was the greatest thing ever.
That is pretty neat. I did like playing with it. Now I can stop using the unicorn and the poop that I send to people with the Animoji and start using the Memoji. So that'll be nice. They can actually get somewhat of an accurate representation other than unicorns and poop.
And they got the tongue thing, too, with the new Animojis.
Yes, when they had tongue detection on the screen behind them, it's like, we're all going to be sticking our tongues out at our phones. Speaking of which, something we didn't cover since we're just now doing it in this order, FaceTime will allow you to use your Memoji as the thing that people are seeing while they're talking to you. You can do all sorts of Snapchat-like effects in your group chat. So that's kind of novel, I guess. So let's see. So my my second favorite announcement of WWDC. So let's give some background. So well, this story ends happily. So as anyone who listened to last week's episode knows, I went out and I bought a cheap knockaround LG, I think it was a G5 off of eBay, and I popped a SIM in it from Verizon, and I was using that as a Waze and Google Maps phone with Android Auto in my car. Since my car supports both CarPlay and Android Auto, and I do a lot of traveling in the summer, a lot of driving between states, I like, knowing where the cops are. I like knowing what's going on. I did report the cop that gave me a ticket into Waze in the tiny town that I was in. Not that it did any good, but maybe I died for all of your ticket sins, for all of your speeding sins, that for everyone that came after me, I'll be your you can attach me to the crucifix of the speeding ticket. But I really wanted this, and I used it a lot. And my experience on my six-hour each-way drive the previous week was not exactly the best experience. Android Auto kept crashing on me quite a bit. I think there's something wrong with the phone that I bought off eBay, because I would have 5 bars of LTE on my phone almost the entire way, and I would see the Android phone popping between 1X, and which is no data, to 3G to LTE briefly and then back again. It cycled through a lot of things. Android Auto crashed a lot, like a lot. You know, sometimes it would go an hour or two before it would crash. Sometimes it would crash five times in 20 minutes to the point that I almost turned it off at the very end of my journey. And I was thinking, you know, as much as I rag on Android, this can't be how people live. This can't be people who have this device, their experience normally. So I was feeling froggy on Saturday, and I decided to buy a Prime exclusive Android phone. I bought a Moto G6 that was running Oreo, and I thought, okay, there is no harm in doing this. There was a little voice inside of my head that says, Brian, WWDC is on Monday. Do you really want to spend $235 on a phone just before WWDC? And I said, shut up, common sense. Apple hasn't allowed it thus far. What are the odds they're going to do it this year? Come on, this is the stability release. This is the snow leopard of iOS. They're not good. They already said they're not doing anything in CarPlay. This is a safe bet, self. Go ahead and buy that Android phone. You deserve it.
So I have a really important question, though.
Yes.
Does the voice of common sense in your head really sound like Mr. Hankey?
Well, at least I had a voice of common sense this time. Usually it's just two devils that are challenging me to spend more.
Buy.
Why are you buying the G6? Go buy a Pixel. But a Pixel's $650, and I just want it for navigation. Who cares? Ball out of control. So I was at least I had a pang. It sounds like that because it's an undeveloped thing inside of my head, and the voice of reason doesn't get to talk very much. But he was saying, come on, man, it's WWDC is Monday. What if they announce Waze and CarPlay support? I mean, Waze and Google Maps inside of CarPlay. And I thought, that's never going to happen. I mean, eventually, sure. But this is a stability release. They're not going to do anything for CarPlay. Come on, this is low priority. It would make too much sense. I had that phone barely 24 hours before, in the keynote, as a side note, oh yeah, CarPlay will be getting Google Maps and Waze. We're opening up to third-party maps. And I almost flung that phone across the room. I mean, yeah, I was happy. But at the same time, I was just like, I literally just got this phone. Like, So the nice thing is I did initiate immediately during the keynote the return to Amazon. Slapped it in the box today, put it in the mail. And before I even made it home from the UPS store, I already had the amount refunded to my card. So kudos to Amazon. I got it nice. All back, except for $8. They did charge me $8, idiot tax for shipping. But, you know, I got most of that back. I will say that the Motorola, the G6, was not a bad phone. It was for $235. Now, you get Amazon apps that you can't uninstall, and you see little ads on the home screen, not in the lock screen, but in the home screen. But since it was going to live in the console of my car, I really didn't care. Like, it was not bad. And, yeah, it was like $15 or $20 cheaper than buying it outright. It was a carrier unlocked, and, you know, and the day that I had it and drove around with it, it never came off of LTE, so that was something. I just got a bum phone, I think, on eBay. So that's all that was. But I'm very happy about this, but at the same time, you know, it's just my luck. So I think the only reason they announced it was because I bought a stupid phone to actually just do nothing but Waze and Google Maps for Android.
Tech karma.
I really, again, I died for your mapping sins, I do believe. That was I was your sacrificial lamb. Because if I hadn't done that, this wouldn't have happened.
But you know what stinks, though, is we probably won't be able to use Waze or Google Maps with CarPlay until the general release of iOS 12.
Yes, at least until September. Now, just for grins and giggles, I did go to the Waze website and sign up to be a beta tester in the hopes that, you know, they'll use test flight and push some things out. And they're not accepting the iOS beta testers at this time. But you have to wonder, did Google know this was coming? Because if not, you know, they're going to need some, you know, open it up to some beta testers. Go sign up for the Waze beta program and keep your fingers crossed, and hopefully they'll need some, and I would definitely try it. I can tell you that on the cheap phone that I was using, the one from eBay, it was not a great experience. Like, it was kind of half-baked, it felt like. When I was using it on the other phone, I didn't have quite that bad experience, but I only had 24 hours with it, and I didn't drive that many places. So, you know, I wasn't planning a couple of big drives coming up where I was going to test it. That's not going to happen now. But Google Maps is definitely, at least on Android Auto, you know, more of a first-class citizen. It'll be interesting to see what they do here when they don't really have any skin in the game from an operating system perspective and how they handle that. I still think it'll probably be subpar because I wonder if they'll allow access to the microphone. Like, you know, if you use the Spotify app in CarPlay, to my knowledge, you can't just hit search and then speak something and have it search. I'm guessing that Waze and Google Maps will probably be the same way, where you'll still have that restriction where if you the only way to ask for something will be through Siri, and the only thing Siri is going to spawn is its own mapping, I would guess. Now, again, that's a guess. Till I get my hands on it, I can't tell you. I'd be very shocked if that wasn't the case. Are you guys excited about this like I am?
Yeah, I'm pretty fired up about it. I am going to be in the market for a new car in probably a couple of months. I'm definitely going to look for something that has CarPlay on it. So it's just one of those things. It's just got to happen. So
you're totally going to go for the new BMW with the wireless CarPlay?
With a subscription.
I'm going to get one of those $2,000 a month subscriptions, you know, for the car.
I got to say, those things that both Volvo, BMW, and Mercedes have announced are pretty, they're pretty kick-ass, where you pay a flat fee, you get a new car delivered to you whenever you want it, and it covers insurance and everything. If I were super rich, I would be all over that. Just, yeah, bring me my new car, and I want to drive this, you know, this S-Class this week. Just bring me.
I mean, nothing says baller like, you know, a new Mercedes every week.
Every single week.
Know?
So, yeah, that was kind of nice. But it's interesting to me that, you know, off on that tangent of seeing Volvo, BMW, and Mercedes, and presumably other car makers, where they're doing this sort of on-demand model where you have an app, you pay a flat fee, and you just get a car with insurance delivered to you that, you know, cleaned and ready to go for you to use. That's kind of nice. Beyond what most people will afford, but I can imagine in America, at least when some of the other car manufacturers of domestic cars open it up, it may become more of an affordable option for people. Who knows? It will be a good way to fight the rideshare phenomenon. So we'll see.
Well, I think of, you know, that point, just to take a short little detour there, is sort of like the traveling salesman type people where they cover, say, like a region of a state or something, and they have to, you know, they wind up traveling 1,500 miles in a week or something, you know, and they may not want to drive their either personal vehicle, or their personal vehicle just is a piece of junk, and, you know, it's just not capable of putting that, carrying that kind of mileage. So that would be, you know, and if they could expense it or you know, write it off at the end of the year on taxes or something or another, you know, it makes sense. And I'm talking about, like you were saying, on the more on the domestic level, where you might pay a couple of hundred a month for a, you know, like a Honda Civic, you know, hybrid or something that, you know, you want to put high mileage on and, you know, have really good gas mileage or something.
Yep. So some of the things that we didn't cover that were also announced is the stability. So they brought up a iPhone 6 Plus as an example, you know, a phone from 2014, and how much faster the responsiveness is going to be. So there is a focus on making sure that, you know, one of the things most people complain about is every year I upgrade and my phone gets slower. Every year I upgrade, it gets worse, and, you know, it's not optimized for old hardware. Well, apparently this year they're working on that, so that's going to be nice. Everything that runs iOS 11 today will be able to run iOS 12, which is also nice. So that means everything back to the iPhone 5S will be getting an OS upgrade. So for those people that, you know, just participated in the battery program where they got the cheap replacement battery, you're going to have a super stable, super responsive OS if Apple is to be believed. So that's kind of nice. Smoother animations. Some of the things that were announced but didn't really get any time on stage were the iPhone 10 gestures on iPad. So swiping down from the top right corner is going to bring up Control Center. Swiping up from the bottom will, you know, it's going to be nice to see that, because eventually you want that parity. I hate when I'm on my iPad and I want to get to the Control Center and I have to double tap the home button instead of swiping down. So at least that's going to be the same. You know, not a big deal, but I kind of like it.
For me, I use two phones every day. I've got an iPhone 6S and an iPhone 10, and it, you know, just the lack of parity there is kind of a pain in the butt. And I have a current model iPad Pro, the 10.5, and, you know, it's different than the iPhone 10. So to kind of have all those back on par with one another would be nice.
So the other thing that was announced, some of the other things were the SMS one-time passcode autofill. I love when they get like this low-hanging fruit type of things where it just makes your life better and it's not a lot of work for them to do. And I know we should all be using things like Google Authenticator or Authy or something like that. And for the most part, whenever that's available, I do, just because I'm not a big fan of the SMS passcodes. You know, they're vulnerable to people doing SIM swaps and number hijacking, and they're not the most secure things because of that. But hey, at least it's going to be smart enough to recognize that you got one of those codes and automatically be able to autofill that when you're doing it. So, you know, hey, that's nice. Fill in passwords from third-party password managers more easily. So there's going to be a password manager API, which one of the things that as someone who's used 1Password for a long time is, you know, Keychain has gotten a lot better on iOS and the Mac of being able to fill things in. And I use it whenever possible, but I've had essentially two copies of everything. So, you know, something in 1Password and usually the same data inside of Keychain. So being able to just call on 1Password through an API, wow, I'm very excited about that. Do you guys do that as well, or do you rely on one more than the other? How does that work for you guys?
I use 1Password pretty much exclusively. I don't really bother with iCloud Keychain or with Keychain period on my iOS devices, you know, and if I use the share sheet a lot when I'm in Safari and I need to log into something.
So for me on iOS, I use Keychain most of the time because I had such a investment in it for years. I just got 1Password probably 6-ish months ago, predominantly peer pressure from my co-hosts on this podcast. And the reason I don't use it that much on iOS is it's kind of a pain. Like I have to exit whatever app I'm in, go to 1Password, authenticate with Face ID, grab the password, and then paste it and whatnot. And so if it's already in Keychain, the other thing is I'm not allowed to install 1Password on my work laptop. So that's kind of a pain there in that I can't retrieve anything. So I'm always having to refer back to the iPhone to pull up any passwords for sites that I just don't remember the password, or I've changed them to a longer, cryptic, more secure password.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, part of the use case for me with 1Password is being able to be on my Windows machine, sync them via Dropbox or iCloud or whatever, and be able to access, even though 1Password on the PC is terrible in comparison to the Mac version. I mean, it's functional, but it's not great. It's not speedy. But at least being able to have access to that data on Windows is a nice thing if I'm having to use my Windows machine for something.
They've at least brought UI parity to now that 1Password 7 has come out, both on the PC and Mac. It's if you'll remember, just 6 months ago, it was 1Password 4 still for Windows and 1Password 6 for Mac. And now they're very similar, which I'm on the subscription service. I signed up for the subscription service, I guess, maybe about 18 months ago. So it's not being synced through Dropbox or any sort of cloud service. It's using 1Password's, you know, own synchronization now. So it's a lot easier to not have to worry about putting Dropbox on my Windows machine and making sure that data, you know, syncs. It's its own separate entity.
Yeah, you know, I need to do that. I haven't done that yet, and I probably should. So that's something I'm going to have to do as well. Also, they're going to be able to share passwords between your nearby iOS and Mac devices, which I always did with just, you know, copying to the clipboard. But it's kind of nice to know that that's going to be easier to do.
I have a funny story about that. So I don't know if you've seen this, but I was trying to log into someone's Wi-Fi the other day, and I was just fat fingering the password, and somebody that was also on the same Wi-Fi, but they're also in my contacts list, got a prompt on their phone and said, "Would you like to share this password with your friend Brad?" And he was like, "What the hell is this?" And we looked it up, and sure enough, it's a new thing that they've added to iOS 11. And I didn't know anything about it. Then the other day I was trying to do the same thing on my phone, and it popped up on my MacBook screen and said, "Would you like to share this with yourself on your iPhone?"
Yeah, I've had that happen on iOS 11 where I wiped my device, I guess. And I had a 63 character password for my Wi-Fi for the longest time. It was the most obnoxious thing. Recently, when I got this Logitech or Logi or whatever they're calling themselves now, whenever I got their HomeKit enabled camera, it was not dealing well with that. So I'm like, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to change it. That's when I learned that when you're really heavily automated into your house, changing your Wi-Fi password is a pain on some of those devices because you have to go back. You have to delete them, basically, and recreate them. So if you had elaborate scenes created, as I did, you have to go back, and once you give them the password, put them back in their scenes and create your automation. I spent an entire Saturday doing that, and I'll die before I change this password again. This is it from now until eternity. But the reason I say that is because I think I was setting up a device or something too, and my wife was using her iPad, and I was about to have to put in, you know, a long password, and it goes, "You set up your Wi-Fi? You need your password?" I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "You want me to hit share?" And I'm like, "Yeah, do it." Ding. And then all of a sudden I had it. I'm like, "Oh, this is another thing that's the best." This is also related to that feature if you have two iOS, like if you have an iPhone 8 and an iPhone 10, and you're moving from one device to the other, you just have to have them close by and they'll share all that data. Just kind of like Android does that as well, I noticed. So nice things that they have that support. So that's good. But yeah, that would be disconcerting. Like, you know, am I being hacked? I guess if you weren't aware of that feature, but I had to use this especially because I hated typing in my password because it was so prone to error historically. Let's see. So Siri is going to know more about celebrity facts, motorsports, and food facts. You can ask how many calories are in something, and it should tell you. That's kind of nice, I guess. I really hope that's not the extent of it, and I really hope they continue to beef it up all year long. But, you know, I'll take what I can get at this point, I suppose.
I do. I would use that, mainly since I'm diabetic, and I do use an app called Calorie King a lot. So if I'm out at, say, a chain restaurant or something, and I can look up something that's on the menu and see how many carbs it has in it, and then I know how much insulin to bolus before we eat, just because it's maybe some specific thing that you have no idea how much carbs or granulated sugar is in this.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Calorie King. I used to use that.
Yeah, so one other thing, I don't think it was mentioned during the keynote yesterday that I found that's a new feature in iOS 12 is, and you guys are going to kill me because it's regarding killing background apps, which shouldn't do. All right, but now if you do want to kill a background app, you don't have to actually flick up and then hold the button and make the X come up and then hit the X. You can actually just bring up your app switcher and flick the app right off the top of the screen like you used to be able to.
I saw Renee Ritchie tweet about that this morning, and I didn't realize that either, and I tried it. I'm like, oh, this is so nice. So are you one of those people that do that and kill all your apps in the background? Please tell me you're not.
Only app I ever kill in the background is GPS. And I know that I probably don't have to anymore.
I get that, though. I get it.
But man, I mean,
GPS is a battery killer.
It is absolutely a battery killer. Well, let me rephrase. It probably isn't now, right? Because Waze probably goes to sleep, Maps goes to sleep or whatever. But I remember going to New York City, quite a few years ago, and I was getting like 3 hours of battery life because I was, walking around trying to use, the walk around version. And this was also during the time where iPhone was still exclusive to AT&T. So New York City, you'd have 5 bars of service, but you'd have no data connection at all. And so it was constantly seeking in the background. And, we kind of got lost, and both of us, 3 hours into our journey, started with 100% phone, and now we're dead. Like, I remember having to go to the Fifth Avenue Apple Store, and we bought external battery packs to go on them for the remainder of the trip. So I guess I got burned bad a couple of times and force a habit, but I leave everything else running. But when I get out of the car, I do flick Waze off or I flick Maps off just as a precautionary.
The reason I do that is because if I don't and I walk in and directions are still turned on, you'll be in the middle of something and you'll hear from your pocket, please make a U-turn when you know what I mean? Like, for me, the embarrassing factor of your phone still navigating and not being smart enough to know that you've arrived at your destination or whatever is probably the reason I do it. I hate to admit, but I catch my wife when she's using her phone. I'll see her do it and start, killing stuff. I'm like, would you stop doing your, leave me alone. And it's like, you're killing your battery life. I like to do it. Just leave me alone. It's not doing what you think it's doing. It's going to get you. This is counterintuitive to what you want, but she's having none of it. So I've had to just learn to live with her doing it, and she won't listen to me.
I have to bite my tongue with everyone. I'll be on a customer side or around coworkers, and they do it, and I'm just like, stop it.
Yeah, it's like watching somebody else vacuum. Right. They're not going to do it the way you want it to.
Or mow the lawn. Yes, I totally understand that. Well, we're about an hour into this. This is probably a good place to stop because we can cover Apple Watch, Apple TV, and macOS in our next episode, which maybe we'll try to get that out a little bit quicker than our normal schedule now that we have so much to talk about. Would you guys be amenable to that?
Yeah, that actually sounds like a good follow-on episode because, there is some good stuff in Apple TV, Apple Watch, and Mac OS that we need to talk about. I've got to say, last year and couple previous years, WWDC had some highlights here and there, but I will say across the whole platform of iOS and Apple TV and Apple Watch and Mac OS, this year it seems like they really kind of came out swinging And I think you and I were both kind of expecting this to be the incremental updates, the polishing of the diamond in the rough kind of thing. And it really seems like they're bringing some nice innovation out. I'm just hoping that some of the rumors I've read this week about iPhone pricing, you know, actually coming down $100 to $150 this year, that would be really nice to be able to get whatever the iPhone 10 version 2 is for, $120 or $256 version for $900 instead of $1,150, right? That would be a nice change.
Yeah. And I think, in our next episode, we can talk more about this too, but you know, last year's WWDC was more exciting. It seemed like the keynote went on for like 2.5 hours or something. We got new iPads out of it last year. You know, we got the announcement about the HomePod. Like, it was exciting. And I remember I was at my parents' house and I'm, you know, in their internet connection. I just sat at the kitchen table watching this for like 2.5 hours. And I felt kind of bad because it just felt like it was dragging on forever. But everything they announced was really cool stuff. Yeah, you get new iPads. Yeah, you're getting a HomePod. Yeah, you're getting this and that. And it just seemed so cool. I didn't realize it was going to take a year to realize so much of that. I would like to point out that we're 9 months from the time it was announced and there's still no sign of the AirPower charging mat. So we still don't have that after nearly a year. Not that I'm complaining because I'm probably not going to buy it anyway, but just kind of weird that we made it all this way to another WWDC and something we knew about, you know, from the iPhone 8 timeframe still hasn't been released. That's kind of strange.
Well, to steal one of my buddy's jokes, just like the finance manager at the Kia dealership, I have 0% interest.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, but still, I think this was good. If nothing else, my big takeaway from at least the iOS announcements are that I'm getting my Google Maps and Waze support inside of CarPlay. Probably still won't be as good as the Android Auto experience, but hey, I'll take it. You know, good enough that I only have to carry one device. I'm happy about that. And the Siri shortcuts, I'm really, really excited about that because as someone who makes custom use of HomeKit scenes, of like, you know, being able to tell my HomePod good night and have it turn off my lights and set my temperature and do this and that, being able to have that same functionality on my phone with just about any app, if that lives up to the hype, that's going to be transformative. That's going to be really powerful for the things that I'll be able to do. And it makes my phone even more useful. So I'm super, super stoked about that. If you guys had to sum up one or two of the things that interest you most as we close this out, what would yours be?
The AR kit abilities and what it's going to bring to gaming, like in lower time, you know, when we brushed over the Lego stuff, and definitely the Siri shortcuts. Those are both really great things.
I think I like the Siri shortcuts a lot. One of the things, I'm about to really start some pretty intense physical therapy. It's been 3 months since I had my Achilles surgery. So for it to be able to kind of detect workouts as they start, like I'm not great at remembering to get on the bike and then pull up my watch and hit the button saying that I'm starting. So a lot of times I've started and like 6 minutes in, I'm like, crap, I'm not getting credit for this.
Oh,
so
we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah, that's the watch OS. Yes.
We haven't even covered
that yet, but yeah, sorry. That is going to be great.
So until next time.
That's right. So, I guess that's probably, we have to probably stop here just because folks are going to lose interest if we go too long. You know, we'll get the next one out where we talk about Apple TV, which I'm very happy about some of those announcements. The watchOS has me excited.
Speaking of Apple TV,
this is the first time that,
so I'm not going to give anything away, but this is the first time that I have done with my Apple developer profile to get the beta versus doing the public beta. And the trick to getting the profile on the Apple TV is pretty ingenious. Have you ever done it?
I've not. How do you do that?
So exactly, right? So there's no browser, so you can't go to developer.apple.com and go to the download section. So what you do is you actually go on your Mac to developer.apple.com, you go to the download section, you find tvOS 12, and you download the profile locally to your Mac. Then you go open Dropbox and upload that file to Dropbox. Then you go to your Apple TV and go to like general privacy. And then there's a like share analytics or something. You go to that and you hit the play button on share analytics. Makes no sense, right? And when you hit the play button, it says, would you like to add a profile? and you go back to your Dropbox, you copy the link to that mobile config file that you just downloaded, you paste it into the text bar, and voila, it downloads the tvOS 12 mobile config file. You tell it that you're willing to take beta updates and hit update software, and it took like 5 minutes and tvOS 12 was downloaded, installed, and ready to go.
Wow.
Huh. I'll dig up the link for that, and we'll put it next week's show notes when we talk about the Apple TV.
Interesting. All right. Well, that should cover it for this time. Hopefully, I don't know if Jim will be back by the time we record our follow-up. We're going to have to discuss when we want to do that.
And if he's back, will he be in rehab, or who knows what's going to happen to Jim?
Oh, Jimmy. Anyway, that should do it for this week. Have yourselves a good week, fellas, and later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.